Welcome back to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. When we think about blockbusters, movie stars, glossy award ceremonies like the Oscars, one place comes to mind: Hollywood. But a new documentary is celebrating the little-known history of a tri-state area city that was actually the original Hollywood: Fort Lee, New Jersey. Fort Lee, the film town by Richard Krasarsky, was the inspiration for a new documentary called The Champion, a story of America's first film town by co-producers Tom Myers and Dennis Doros. Tom is the founder and executive director of the Fort Lee Film Commission, and Dennis is the co-founder of Milestone Film and Video. Tom, Dennis, welcome to Midday.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Jonathan.
So, of course, these days, when folks think of Fort Lee, they think of one thing:
Bridgegate.
So most probably had no idea, like I had no idea, that it used to be the center of American filmmaking. How did that come to be?
Well, just to start off with Bridgegate, I always kid our mayor, Mark Sokolich, that that was the best thing to happen to Fort Lee. And he says, what do you mean? Because when that happened, the Los Angeles Times ran a front page article saying this small town in New Jersey and Los Angeles have something in common other than gut-wrenching traffic. And that's the fact that Fort Lee was truly the birthplace of the American film industry. So something like that allows us to tell a story. And we became a film town because we were very close to where the American film industry started, West Orange, New Jersey, and the first studio, the Black Mariah, Thomas Edison. And back in those days, 1893, when he started his first studio, he was making films like The Kiss, The Sneeze, things like that. But in a few short years, they were making films on off of Union Square on East 14th Street. But it was very limiting in terms of where they could shoot. And the new form of transportation, the subway, allowed them to send film crews for a nickel up to 125th Street, where they got a ferry across the Hudson River. And there they had trucks and trolleys to bring them to Fort Lee. And Fort Lee was a wide-open town in terms of scenery. Small town, but if you point your camera in one direction, you have the cliffs where you could do action adventures. You point your camera in another direction, you have a very rural-looking Main Street. And then in the north of town, very sparsely populated for Westerns. And the one thing Fort Lee had was people who wanted to make a buck. So they liked actors, they liked movie studios. And what started out as just location filming in 1907, 1908, by 1910, they started building studios there. And by the time of 1915, we had about 17 studios operating in Fort Lee, employing the entire town. My grandmother worked as an extra as a kid and then worked as a film cutter, and that is very common in Fort Lee history in terms of that connection for with movies.
So I can't imagine these days film industry people getting on the subway with their equipment going anywhere. We're talking cars and things. But Dennis, let me bring you in here. So and Tom gave a good overview of everything, but talk a little more specifically about who was making films then, these folks who were getting on the subway, taking the ferry, going to Fort Lee, and then just decamping to Fort Lee to make movies.
This was really the legendary directors and actors and actresses of the time: D.W. Griffith, Lillian Gish, Mary Pickford, I believe, made films there. The Barrymores actually grew up in Fort Lee at the time. It was a stellar cast. All the talent was in New York. That's one of the reasons why the film industry started in New York. There's the theaters there, the talent is there, and they wanted to make money, and movies paid very well.
Even then?
Yes.
So was it really that it was the landscape of Fort Lee that attracted people there, or was it that time's version of the city of Fort Lee, the government decided, hey, let's go get those folks to come here and shoot movies?
It was across the street from the ferry, as Tom said. It had, you could shoot Westerns there in the forests. You could shoot a downtown melodrama. The Musketeers of Pig Alley by D.W. Griffith always was assumed to have been shot in the slums of New York. It was shot in an alley in Fort Lee. So it had just about every kind of landscape you could have. And it had the freedom of movement that you didn't have in the city because there were too many vehicles, too many people.
So because of what was happening in Fort Lee, there is a lot of, let's say, consternation. I think, Tom, you mentioned earlier about Edison. I'm thinking Edison Theater, but There is a lot of competition and angst about what was happening in Fort Lee. And at one point in the film, there's a reference to, quote, sleuths of the patent companies. Explain this.
Well, Edison was very controlling in terms of his patents, and there was a certain trust where D.W. Griffith was part of it, so he could shoot films. But other independent filmmakers like Carl Laemmle, who went on to found Universal starting in Fort Lee, and before that the Independent Motion Picture Company, and William Fox, they were making films in Fort Lee, and they weren't paying Edison his due. And so Edison would send Pinkerton agents up to Fort Lee, and there's a story about Carl Laemmle, the founder of Universal, one night taking film, cans of film, going into a basement in Fort Lee and hiding from Edison's Pinkerton agents. So this is something that a film could be made out of. But eventually, through courts and lawsuits, they prevailed, meaning Laemmle and Fox. And these studios, like Universal, like Fox, became institutions in America, all starting in Fort Lee, being chased by Pinkerton agents. It's a funny and true story.
So another, were you going to say something?
I was going to say the Pinkerton agents weren't serving papers and saying, please cease and desist. They were carrying guns and clubs, and they were violent.
Oh, this is old school.
This is 1900, 1910. It was not a pretty picture, and that's one of the reasons they went to Los Angeles. Other people did, because it was further away from the guns and the billy clubs.
Okay. We're going to put that off to the side for a moment, because I have to ask you about this fella named Mark Dittenfoss. How does he figure in this story? He's a central character, but who is he?
He was a very interesting character, like most of them were. They were entrepreneurs. They were trying to make a buck. And by 1905, 1910, the Nickelodeons were making fortunes for the owners. And at the same time, the people making the films were selling them over and over again. And there were copies and bootleg copies and new versions of it. And Dittenfoss saw the future. He was a very, very tall man. He was very distinctive. And he was the one who came to New Jersey in 1910 and started the Champion Studios in Englewood Cliffs, right nearby. And he started making the very first film he did was The Indian Land Grab, about the white people taking lands from the Indians. And it was a very amateurish in a lot of ways, but a very interesting political film back then and even today.
I am speaking with Dennis Doros and Tom Myers, co-producers of the documentary The Champion, a story of America's first film town. Okay, so you mentioned, Dennis, just a moment ago, that people, the movie people, one of the reasons why they packed up from Fort Lee and moved west, as far west as they could get without drowning into the Pacific Ocean, was because of the guns and the clubs and the violence involved in movies. Was that the only reason, or did California make a play for the film industry?
California made a play for it. There was a lot of things going on that ended the short Camelot of film Fort Lee had. Basically, you had World War I, which there was a coal shortage and you couldn't heat these big studios. The Hudson River froze over. There was a flu epidemic that was just horrible in New York. So all of this combined with the vestiges of Edison, and the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce was beckoning with sunshine, 365 days a year. Carl Laemmle built two studios in Fort Lee. He built one major studio for a short time, was the largest studio in America. But then he was given all this land. I mean, he was able to purchase this land where in Los Angeles that was bigger than the entire town of Fort Lee, and that's where Universal City is today. So it was just the weather, the land opportunities, a little distance from Edison, and they were sick and tired of frozen rivers and flu epidemics and coal shortages. And that was some of the reasons that the industry went to sunny California.
And so then what happened to all of those studios? The people left, but the structures stayed.
Well, that's interesting, and it's an excellent point, because one thing we didn't touch on yet was the diversity that was in Fort Lee in terms of filmmaking. That wasn't reflected in Hollywood for decades after that. You had Griffith making films on the streets of Fort Lee in 1908 to 1912, and in 1920, you had a pioneer filmmaker, an African-American filmmaker by the name of Oscar Micheaux, who was shooting on those same streets. Now, he wasn't afforded the ability to shoot in California, California, but he used the studios of Fort Lee after the other studios left. And from 1920 to 1948, he made many films, including the first all-talking African-American musical in those Fort Lee studios. You had Alice Guy Blaché, the first woman director and studio owner, who built her studio in Fort Lee in 1912 and was making hundreds of films there when women didn't have the right to vote. You had a whole French-making film community, including Eclair Studios in Fort Lee. So the diversity in Fort Lee was really, for me, it's the most significant chapter in our history. And as there was so little known about that up until the last decade or so. Mm-hmm. And we're learning more and more about it. And the films that still survive of Michaud, like Symbol of the Unconquered or Alice Guy Blaché's Falling Leaves, they tell a story. And I think one of the things I thank Dennis Doros and his wife Amy Heller and Milestone is that they're allowing this chapter of important American film history to be seen via this documentary. So I think it's something that needs to be said today, because I think a lot of people are unaware of that diversity at that period of time.
Dennis, is that one of the things that attracted you to this, not only just telling this unknown or forgotten history of Fort Lee, but talking about the movie industry and its beginnings, and beginnings that were East Coast but also diverse?
Yes, very much so. We are a company that likes, the gentlemanly way of saying it is, mess with the canon. We like to add to the canon. We like to say, okay, you say this is the first. Dorothy Arzner is the first woman director. There's hundreds before her, including, of course, Alice Guy Blaché. So adding this chapter to history, making it published, we added a lot of films with the Fort Lee Film Commission, the short films, even a feature film shot there. It adds another chapter to what people think they know about it. And growing up in New Jersey, nobody knew this history either. It wasn't until, I think, 1967, where the Newark Museum and Paul Speer launched the very first exhibit saying, here's this history you don't know about.
Is that when you learned about it? When did you learn about it? Did you know about it?
I learned after I came back to film in New York when the 1980s. I was completely unknown of this history. I grew up in Springfield, New Jersey, mm-hmm. and near Newark, so I didn't know that part, but it fascinated me that there's this other history that we didn't know about.
Mm-hmm. I guess, Tom, you knew all about this.
No, believe it or not, they didn't teach it in schools. We knew from our grandparents and our parents about it. But the way I really learned about it, when I was about 10 years old in my neighborhood, which is the Coitsville section of Fort Lee, in those days, you can go into a saloon as a kid and have a soda in the summertime.
Have a what?
A soda. A soda. It wasn't beer, it was soda. And it was a little small building called, it was originally called Rambo's, and that's where they shot a lot of these films. And the bartender then, in the early 70s, was well into his 80s. His name was Gus Becker, and he was there when they shot these films. So as we were drinking our RC Colas and sitting back on a hot summer day as 10-year-olds in a saloon, he would tell us stories about Pearl White, except he was originally from New York, so it was Poyle White. He told stories about the Barrymores, who he knew. He had a full poster of Florence Lawrence, who was the first actress, really, of film, and it was signed to him by her behind his bar. It was almost like Lily Langtry there. And I look back at that period of time, and that's when I really got interested in that film history. And history is a funny thing. Decades later, we were able, a few years ago, to save that very building from being destroyed, and now there's a marker on it. And we pulled out about 6 costumes from that silent film period on the second floor of that building, because they used it as a dressing room. And now those costumes are at the NYU Costume Studies Department and being restored by the students in that graduate program. So it's only because we happened to be going into that saloon as 10-year-old kids that we were able to learn that history, form a film commission.
Little rascal.
It's totally like that. Save a building. And it's really weird how history happens, and that's the genesis of my interest in film, and that's what led me to Dennis and Amy years later.
And may that be a Simpsonesque lesson for all our
kids. Yes. Let kids in saloons.
And with that, we're going to leave it there. Tom Myers and Dennis Doros. Tom is the founder and executive director of the Fort Lee Film Commission. Dennis is the co-founder of Milestone Film and Video. They're documentary, The Champion, A Story of America's First Film Town, is now out on DVD. Get it. It's a documentary. There's a couple films on it that were shot in those Fort Lee studios. Tom, Dennis, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Coming up, we'll look at the recent arrests of volunteers who are leaving water at the Arizona-Mexico border. This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break.